Like, you know, we're in the past, but we're going to be broadcasting to the future, but, like, the future is going to not have what just happened in the past. I mean, it's just...
It's funny you said that, because I was actually going to, like, fake, like, oh, weren't the Oscars great?
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Hey, Senior Edward.
Hola, Jimmy.
I figure we need to do it slightly different for those binge listeners, so it just kind of catches them off guard.
A little something new.
Yeah, why not? So how are you this week?
I'm good. Been a busy week. How about you?
Yeah, I was on jury duty, and I was sitting in the audience for 5 days while jury selection, and then they sent me home.
Yay.
Yeah, so no jury duty Congrats. For me other than sitting in the audience. So busy week this week, huh?
Yes, very busy.
Well, we have a busy episode this week. So tell me a little bit about your week before we get into it.
We do. So like I said, I wanted to do something a little new. So here we do this at the beginning of our corporate meetings. We all go around the room and we talk about the thing that's really occupying our mind right now. And it can be about personal stuff, work stuff, or whatever is occupying your mind. So you have the choice, Jimmy, since I'm springing it on you. You can either go first or you can kick it to me and then I will go and then you can go after you think about it a little bit.
All right. Well, hey, how about you go first and gives me a chance to think, because you kind of caught me off guard here, not realizing that we were going to do this, but sure, go for it.
Okay. All right, cool. The thing that has been occupying me this week is our TJP blog. As you and I have been talking about it, I've been polishing off our first article.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Really excited about getting this first article out. As you know, I want to do, I've created a new hashtag, a TJP weekend read.
Oh, okay. A weekend read.
It's going to be far less reliable than our weekly podcast, but I do plan to put one out at least every couple of weeks. I have an idea for a couple next ones, some off of our discussions. And this first one is about media as a service and the changing dynamics of the media paradigm. Hopefully it'll be out by the time this airs so people can check it out. Definitely, if not, it'll be out tomorrow for the upcoming weekend.
Cool.
So that's what's on my mind this week. How about you?
I listened to a lot of podcasts, and earlier in the week, I mentioned that, hey, we got to start doing an Instagram and we got to start getting a few things going. I did get that set up and you kind of started doing a few things and you know, we're getting some followers. I put up some pictures tonight about recording and all this stuff.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, you know, I was looking at Instagram too and thinking about that and how are we going to be marketing, growing, getting just other people. And you're right. I mean, you're talking about blogging and doing, I mean, and for some reason, like I'm at work all day as a school psychologist and everything, but like, I'm always thinking about this website. Like it's always at the front. I'm in IEP meetings and all of a sudden I'm like, oh man, I got to get home and like start working on like my show notes or, you know, I got to watch a trailer or, you know, whatever I got to do. And I hate to make it sound like, oh, we're recording for this website or for this podcast and the podcast is at the front of my mind and hey listeners come here because we're all thinking about it. No, I mean, but it's true though, like this is really what I'm thinking about and yeah. Like and we're trying to figure out better ways to make it grow for everybody. I mean, it's so funny you mentioned that, but it's true.
But this week we have a couple of cool new trailers. I kind of tried to go thematic this week. I don't know if you noticed.
I did notice.
The first one is Fahrenheit 451.
HBO.
HBO's take on the Ray Bradbury classic.
Right.
Censorship run rampant. Yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, you know, it releases this May. They don't have a defined date yet, but I mean, the first thing I thought when I was watching the trailer is, in today's climate, right?
Yeah.
not to get to political, but I don't think you can help but get political.
Oh, this one is totally have to be.
Let me ask your opinion. And, and you know, I know kind of where your politics lie, and I have a feeling you know where my politics lie and so on.
Yeah. Yeah.
But do you think the motivation behind the producers of this Fahrenheit 451 is aimed at the Trump administration for banning certain words from use with the CDC?
The EPA. Yeah, across the board.
Yeah, it's like banning the things you can say and the things you can do at the government level because they don't want to give people too much information. And then there's certain parts in there where Michael Shannon, again, Michael Shannon. So, you know, let me back up really quick. So I'm going to, before we go any further, and I know we were talking about your 3-word reviews all these weeks, and I'm going to predict your 3-word review. So,
okay. I'm excited.
And this is going to go right to a past 3-word review.
Uh-huh.
But for this week, it's peak Michael Shannon. Because you can't have too much Michael Shannon.
Well, you were close. You were close,
oh,
but here.
Oh, man, I was close.
That was a consideration early on.
Nice.
So it was in the runnings. But after I watched it a couple times and did a little workshopping with it, my 3-word review, we're jumping ahead a little bit, but this is cool. My 3-word review for this is Michael's Be Everywhere.
Michael's be everywhere. He's all, yeah, it's like peak Michael Shannon.
Because it covers both Michael Shannon and Michael B. Jordan. So Michael B. Jordan's in Black Panther. He's in this. You know, he's in the next Creed, you know, which they're filming right now. So he's all over the place, too. And he's going to be more all over the place in the near future. And, you know, from Michael Shannon for the past year, he's been everywhere. So I think both of these Michaels, you know, and I was gonna do like a Michael B. Jordan, Michael B. something, and I was like, oh no, make it Michaels be everywhere.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. I love it because I didn't know so much about the Michael Jordan, and I'm not talking about the basketball Michael Jordan. But no, the Michael Shannon. More specifically, this guy's been in everything, and even in Shape of Water and all the stuff we've been covering, 12 Strong, the whole nine, you know, and it's just, I'm just like, okay, you can't have too much Michael Shannon, you know? But anyway, so getting to the 3-word review and my prediction, I was close, man.
You were close. And I, if I left it with my first thing that I wrote down, that was what I wrote down first, and then I workshopped it, and then I came up with that, so.
You know, which is better because you're peak Dwayne Johnson. You know, I was like, I got to go with peak Michael Shannon. That's what made me think of that. But the thing about it, though, is when he gets into the point, you know, they start talking about, you know, you see that room of books, and he says, you know, the books are insanity and chaos.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is about how news is kind of like a bad thing, you know, where he said, like,
yeah,
it's news, and then right after are facts.
No, I love the scariness of the space where he's talking to a class full of students and he's training them to be these flamethrowers and they're talking about the future where there are no more books and he's so energized by the thought of getting rid of all these books. And I can't tell throughout it whether he's trying to play Michael Shannon against it and he's just playing into this to flip it, or whether he's just into it. And I think that's part of what we're trying to figure out here, you know?
Or does he really want to burn? Because I was like, he wants to burn. I mean, whoa, man, the guy's a pyro. but yeah, exactly. And, you know, and the thing that got me thinking, like, I mean, how relevant is this movie? I mean, I'm definitely going to watch, especially on HBO. I'm definitely going to watch it. I mean, it's like there's no barrier. Well, okay, there's no barrier. There's the barrier of do you have HBO or not. But I mean, but no, I'm definitely going to watch it.
Yeah.
But with that said, you look at Michael Shannon as, I don't know, what would you call him? He's kind of the, I mean, he's definitely the protagonist where he's...
He's the mentor. He's the, you know, yeah. I think Michael B. Jordan is the protagonist. It feels like we're kind of riding with him.
Oh, you think he's the protagonist?
Oh, yeah. And I think Michael Shannon is the mentor, and he's this, you know, paternal mentor voice figure. Since we're talking about trailers and the mechanics of a trailer.
Yeah.
I have a note. This is kind of a thing that we would give in a room. If we saw this trailer in a room where we could make creative notes on it, we do a lot with Michael B. Jordan at the top in both visual SOTs and some VO. But when we do Michael Shannon's VO, it feels like we just get his VO first without seeing him talk at all.
Right.
And at points in the VO early on, I feel like it's more of a Woody Harrelson sound, like he has more of a drawl in his voice. So my note would be to get Michael Shannon on screen with an SOT earlier in the spot, so that we can identify him with this voice that he's putting together, so that when we do hear his VO, we're not thinking, who is this? It sounds kind of like Michael Shannon, but it could be Woody Harrelson as well. So that's a one way to kind of clue in your audience in a really quick way to identify the character to the voice, you know, rather than having an omniscient VO that you're going to identify later as somebody.
Yeah, I mean, overall, I thought the storytelling for this trailer was spot on. I mean, you know, of course, the Ray Bradbury book, the 1960s version of the movie, and then kind of the redux of the HBO version coming up here. It looks like it releases in May, but again, there's no defined date.
Because they're HBO. They can do whatever they want.
Yeah, they can do what they want. But the main thing is, though, I would say it's great storytelling. It's a cool way that they show the future in a more modern sense. It's like every time you look at something from the 60s to the 70s, 80s, 90s, and, you know, just to march up forward, when things come out and they have a thing of the future.
Yeah.
A good example might be Blade Runner. And these images of the future are scary when you watch them, but very few movies or TV shows, but let's say movies here, very few of them hold up when you look 20 years down the road. Mm-hmm. I think this one might hold up because the coloring, the character, the flamethrowers, I mean, the whole thing, you know, it's not on film, so you don't have that degradation of the quality. You know, I'm sure it's shot digital and all this stuff, just like everything is today, but this movie's going to hold up. You know, it's going to play well.
I definitely think it'll play well. There's definitely some tension in the way that we see Michael B. Jordan developing as a character throughout this spot. And I like the idea that we don't know how he's playing it.
Yeah, and I would agree with that, as you see his growth in character and the tension, and the music plays right along with that. Oh, it heightens it. Yeah.
That definitely heightens it. Yeah, it heightens the thrill of the darkness, you know, the look of this spot is all, you know, dark with the bold super contrast of flamethrowers and flashlights and...
Right. And the fact he wants to burn, I just hope he doesn't need pyro counseling or something.
Yeah, that's your world, right?
No, but the editing and the jump cuts, I mean, you know, I think it's a well put together trailer. Overall, I mean, yeah, I'm going to watch it. I mean, it looks cool. How about you?
I love it. I love the idea of it. I love revisiting something, like you said, from a new world. The lens at which we view something from the 60s, 70s, 80s to today, it clues the audience into a different perspective on something. So this is a new perspective on an old work that still holds up today because we're still struggling with the same ideas. So this is one of those core ideas, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and the other thing I like about it, as I mentioned at the top of this, was the political innuendo that is so relevant to all the stuff we're seeing, the banning of words and the banning of ideas just because some news organization puts out information and somebody, not to name names, claims it's fake news doesn't necessarily mean that it's fake news. You know, just because you say it doesn't make it true.
Right.
I think this movie is just going to play into all of that stuff, and it's just so timely. You know, whether on purpose or planned, I don't know, but it's just...
Yeah. I think the, you know, the idea of confirmation bias is so strong and so relevant and prevalent. And, you know, now people are more aware of, you know, these biases that people have. And the confirmation bias to me is the strongest. When you hear things are fake news and it disagrees with you, then you are readily acceptable to just agree with it being fake news. And it's like, as long as things are keep confirming my suspicions and my own assumptions, then we're all right to move forward. This tribal mentality is something that...
Well, it's polarizing.
It's polarizing. And I know that we have a climate where maybe the leaders, Trump being one of them, he contributes to it. But I think there was a tribal mentality before Trump that he was able to exploit to get where he is today. You know, I think the tribes were set up before, and our mishandling of America as more than one tribe has kind of led us to this place where we know we put the blinders on and we assume that we can all exist as one tribe. But then when we try to do that, it doesn't really work out. So maybe that's not the answer. And this is interesting to say, like, maybe that's the same thing they're trying to do here, is like the only way we can have one tribe in the future is to get rid of books and to remove ideas. It's interesting when you said Westworld, I had started watching Westworld because I saw the season 2 trailer in front of something else I was watching on HBO. And to me, Westworld is the same thing, except with robots instead of humans. The robots of the future have a virus that is spread by the ideas, the words that they share with each other. So, you know, one robot can say a phrase to another robot, and just thinking about, just processing those words in their robot brain causes them to raise into consciousness that, you know, I'm only a few, 4 episodes or so in, but, you know, some of these robots are so advanced that they're becoming sentient beings, you know? So I love the idea of ideas and words being this powerful. So it's that powerful in Westworld, and now, you know, words on paper are so powerful in Fahrenheit 451. That they need to be controlled, destroyed, and burned.
It's very political. Like you said, it's polarizing. It kind of angers you when you see people burning books, because most people, I think, like to read, or your topics, you know, you're a historian, you're into theology or fiction, you know, whatever it is, but people who enjoy reading, you have kind of this visceral reaction when you see them saying, like, we have to get rid of the books, and the books are the reason that everything is just so bad. And it's like, as somebody who's a reader and likes to read, and my family and my wife, and we all share books with each other and everything, I mean, you do have kind of that reaction to say, like, well, what are you doing burning books? Like, that's the reason that we have, like, literacy is why we have everything we have in the past 500 years or whatever, you know? And then just to, like, burn it all, it's just insane.
I can't wait.
But yeah, I'm going to watch it. I'm going to watch it for sure. Yeah, I don't have any more thoughts. I don't know if you do.
No, that's it for me. Thank you.
And then moving on to Ralph Breaks the Internet.
So on this one, I have some other some notes as well. But this note is more about the title. I don't know if you noticed the title. So first of all, it's called Ralph Breaks the Internet, which is weird because he's Wreck-It Ralph. It should be Ralph Wrecks the Internet, I thought, or a lot of people that I talked to also agreed. And then it feels like the colon in this title is inverted. Normally, when you have a sequel, you have the name of the franchise in the front, and then the colon, and then the name of the actual episode or the number afterwards. So it should be called Wreck-It Ralph 2: Ralph Breaks the Internet.
Oh, I gotcha. Yeah.
but the official title is actually the inverted, where it's Ralph Breaks the Internet : Wreck-It Ralph 2.
Yeah.
And then they call this a teaser trailer, but it has so much content in it. It's not a teaser. I mean, it's a teaser trailer because it's a little bit short. What is it? It's a minute 45 or something like that. No, it's 2 minutes, so it's not even that short. It's the length of a normal trailer. It looks like, you know, the movie's done. It's more finished than Solo, you know?
Yeah.
And it just feels like trailer number one. To call it a teaser trailer is a bit of a misnomer.
Well, and they put out such a long trailer, like you said, 2 minutes. I didn't even notice that it was a teaser because it felt so finished. And it comes out Thanksgiving.
Yeah. It comes out so ahead of...
Yeah.
Schedule. It's in that window. That's the window for these kinds of these Disney movies. Frozen established the window, and Wreck-It Ralph took it 1 year. Moana had it last year. So it was interesting to hear that they were talking about the sequels for Disney movies and maybe hoping that this would be the first successful sequel. Does this movie... When you look at this movie, does it make you think Pixar?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it does because, I mean, I don't know if it's a Pixar film. I don't think it is. Yeah, it's not. But it has that look to it where it's like really clean.
It's not. It's not a Pixar. It's not a Pixar movie. So,
you know, it has the...
The digital animation. Yeah.
The digital look to it. You know, but it's like that really clean digital look that Pixar gives you. And it's... Along the same lines, similar humor that they get, that Pixar gives you. I wouldn't separate it from Pixar. I would say it's probably right in line there, especially being Disney.
No, I mean, it's definitely a Disney movie, but it has a feel of Pixar to me.
Oh, completely.
I also love the idea that it comes out after Emoji Movie had failed so gloriously. in its execution of trying to do something like this, where it takes a completely digital world and it goes inside that digital world in an animated way. But then because you have no connection with the characters of these emojis, maybe that's what the failure was. That's why you get the low Metascore and the low Rotten Tomato score, and everybody hates that movie. But then this one says, like, Cappy, hold my beer, you know? And it does basically similar tropes, similar stories, and similar ideas where they're walking through a space and he's getting bombarded with pop-ups and things like that in a real practical way.
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting, and, you know, trying to really go for it. So I love that idea that they don't... I mean, obviously, this is probably in production at the same time, if not before, Emoji Movie started, and they spent a lot of time on their stuff.
The other thing it reminds me of, and I don't know how far Disney tends to go into video games and things, but when they show a number of scenes, like when he first gets into the internet, you know, I don't know, what would you say that is? Like the internet superhighway, where they show the highway going past?
Yeah.
Kind of describes or shows how or what a video game might be that could be coming out around the time, you know, and maybe it's for like Xbox or PS4 or something.
Switch Squad. It's the Nintendo. Everybody does that.
Yeah. You know, and it's going to be like a Ralph Breaks the Internet video game just in time for Christmas or something, you know, and it gives me that feel of a movie designed to release a video game. But I mean, you know, there's a lot of, I mean, the video, or I should say the trailer itself, though, has a lot of humor to it. It looks pretty funny. My kids would probably be frightened. However, I think there's probably tons of adult humor that we can laugh at our experience every day on the internet. And I guarantee you they're going to bring in a lot of that kind of the internet tropes that go on that drive us all crazy. You know, maybe ads. And, you know, I know they already showed some eBay stuff and everything.
Yeah, there's like a clickbait.
Yeah, clickbait. I mean, and they're talking, I mean, the whole thing, you know, it's like, I think all that kind of stuff, we're going to be, unfortunately, we're going to relate too well to.
Yeah.
Kids won't pick up on that, but the adults certainly will. And that's where the humor is going to come in, because they're going to exploit it to the fact that they're just going to make it seem so ridiculous that you have to laugh at how entrapped you are in advertising, and I mean, just, yeah, the clickbait headlines, I mean, all that kind of stuff. So it seems like it's going to be pretty fun.
It's going to be amazingly fun. I'm surprised you think that Timmy and Mikey will be scared by things. Would have they seen the first one?
No. The only reason I say that is because, you know, we watch, you know, Finding Nemo and Finding Dory and stuff. And like, I mean, they are just like freaked beyond belief. And it's, you know, I think what it is, it's the stories are pretty realistic.
Mm-hmm.
And emotionally, they touch home. And my kids are pretty sensitive to like others' feelings and are pretty empathetic and so on. And I think Pixar, well, in this case, it's not Pixar, but I mean, I think just the computer animation is so realistic,
yeah,
and so defined that it's difficult to tell what's cartoon and what's not, even though it's a fish swimming around talking to you. But they get so caught up in the barracuda chasing the little, you know, regal tang fish, you know, the blue fish, that it just freaks them out, and they can't watch these movies, and they just take it so much to heart, even like Toy Story and everything, you know, and they, I swear to God, they think their toys come to life when they go to bed.
Yeah.
So they watch these movies, and I think emotionally they get so connected because they're young. I mean, you know, 5 years old and all this stuff, they're young, that I don't think they can make that split between this is just an animated film versus this is real life and let me kiss you goodnight and I'm going to bed. I mean, and mm-hmm. and because of that, they get pretty freaked out, you know?
Hmm.
And I mean, it's my kids, just the way they are. I mean, I would assume other kids are probably similar to them. I mean, I don't know.
No, I think we, you know, as parents, we decided to keep our kids as kids for as long as we could.
Oh, absolutely.
So I think, you know, having a sixth grader and a third grader, they still watch some of their classmates feel as, you know, shows that are too young for them. But I think it's okay. I think, you know,
yeah,
I think
yeah.
We're right now at the cusp of letting them catch up slowly, you know, seeing Black Panther was a big watershed moment for everybody. My 8-year-old, he wore it like a badge, and he still was, you know, very thoughtful to himself, true to himself, to, you know, hide where he felt like it was getting overwhelming. And, you know, it wasn't a big deal. You know, so I think, like you said, when they can self-regulate, when they can figure it out, when they can separate, then it makes it all a better experience.
Yeah. Well, and then that's the thing, you know, like the other day. Well, what was it last? No, Deadpool, a couple episodes ago.
Yeah.
You know, he chimes in the background. No, Deadpool. You know, and I'm like, how does he?
He's half and half.
Yeah, he's half,
right?
And half. And I'm like, how does he know about Deadpool? You know, and it is what it is. I mean,
there's a poster. I don't know. Have you seen the posters for Gringo around town?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Are they around, right, your town? They're around, I guess, my, you know, in LA. There's a lot of posters or a lot of movies. Gringo's a new movie. Everybody's in agreement that everybody thinks it's horrible. but my son is obviously very into posters and into reading posters and reading into what posters mean.
Oh, wow.
So the other day, yesterday or the day before, we're driving down Hollywood Way, and he sees the Gringo poster, and he's like, Daddy, what does Gringo mean? I know it has to do with money, because there's all this money flying around the posters. And I was like, well, it's kind of like a derogatory term, and maybe, you know, it's a misappropriated. And I was like, I was spinning. I don't, you know, I didn't want to go into Gringo.
That's
per
funny.
Se. But it was funny to hear him, like, he's getting the context of a title,
right,
and reading into the poster. And that poster was specifically for, I think, Joel Egerton's character to have the money flying around him. And, you know, Charlize Theron's one doesn't have all the money flying around. So it's the design of the poster is per character. Just an aside that the kids are sponges, and yes, they're all into the world around them.
Well, and with the innuendo of meaning and visualization, the bunny popping scene, you know, with the kid in the back seat on the tablet, and there's Ralph in there, and he's feeding the pancakes over and over and over until yep. this bunny explodes. I thought it was very funny. I actually laughed.
Oh, God, it was hilarious.
Oh, yeah. It was, you know, and what you're imagining is blood and guts with lots of mushy, syrupy fur splatting inside of the tablet, you know, and the kids screaming and all this. I mean, do you think kids are picking up on that, or is that more of the adult side of the humor?
Oh, I definitely think adults are filling their own, in their own, they're making the connections. Kids are, I don't think they are. I don't know if they are. It's different. To me, the telling thing about that was the reaction shots when you have Vanellope and you have Ralph. And they're doing it. Vanellope does it first, where she's looking and she's super excited about feeding bunny.
Yeah.
And then she sees the bunny start to expand, and just instantly she gets a concerned look on her face and turns to Ralph and was like, I think you need to feed the kitty for a little bit.
Right.
And then Ralph is like totally oblivious to the whole thing.
Nope,
and he's just sliding.
He gets the shakes and this one gets the pancakes. Yeah.
And then, you know, and then when he slides that last one over, he's like, oh, he sees it for that first split second.
But it was too late.
It's all over. It's too late.
And yeah.
He's just jamming that last one in.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, overall, I'd say it looks like a cute movie. I'd like to see it, and I probably will. I probably won't see it until my kids, I think, are ready to see it.
Okay.
They tend to get freaked out on these kind of things. I don't know what it is about it, but, you know, we've tried. You know, the ones that they're into, I would say, are the Cars movies. Currently, they're into, like, the, I guess it's, like, the 90s version of, like, Superman and Batman, which probably has more, yeah, cartoons. Probably more gunplay than I would care for them to watch. But it's, like, that cartoon animation where things like this, it's, like, too real animation. Even though it's cartoon. Me,
spectrum.
But like,
yeah.
It's like too sharp, or you know what I mean? Like, in, I don't know, the old man walking in to get on his old EMAC. What would you, it's like an, I can't call it an EMAC iMac. It's like an EMAC, right?
The Apple? I think that's the first iMac. Isn't that the first iMac?
No, it's an EMAC.
With the crazy colors?
It's an EMAC.
No. Is it an EMAC?
Yeah, that's an EMAC with the colors.
Oh, okay.
So, but no, anyway, yeah, that's like when Steve Jobs first came back and all this. But but the thing is, like, when that old man's walking in and he gets on the EMAC and everything, he's doing what he's doing, it's like so
photoreal.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing that kind of freaks out my kids. It's like, you know, Dad, this is supposed to be a cartoon, but they look too damn real.
I totally, yeah.
Yeah, and where, like, the cartoons, even though it's like this cartoon Joker, robot, balloon, floating around, whatever, like, shooting a machine gun, they're just like, yeah, but it's just a cartoon. Like, they just, they totally buy into the cartoon of it, where this is like, what did you call it, photoreal?
It's a photoreal. Yeah. The first time I watched Bolt, I think Bolt was the first movie where I noticed it, where the opening scene of Bolt plays in the window of a pet store. And when it opens on the pet store, it has this lighting effect. It has particles in the air, and there's no animals in it. So it's just like a window. And when it plays out like that in an opening scene, opening shot, I was holding back the idea of saying, all right, well, this is an animated movie. And then it held on it for so long that I was like, is this like something that they went and they shot in,
you know, and then they would cut into the animation.
And then, yeah, and then maybe they would cut into the animation.
Right.
But then when they push into the window and then you see Bolt there as a puppy, then you know that this was animation, but your mind was so fooled by it that the Uncanny Valley didn't have time to make the connections and to say that this is an animation thing. Definitely there's the photoreal thing. But I think even more than that, I think what kids and what audiences are tuned into is the idea of the characters and the development of deep understanding characters. So when you're seeing the Joker, you're seeing Batman, you're seeing Superman, there's not a way to identify with them because they are so superhero that you can't even like fathom being that person.
Yeah, you have no empathy.
You have no, you kind of lack the ability to imagine you as you in their place. And then they're so impervious to harm that maybe you don't need to be empathetic towards them.
Sure.
They lack a vulnerability that we all know that we have as humans amongst each other. And I think I was reading some stuff about the success of Marvel over the lack of success in the Disney, in the DC space, the DC extended universe versus the Marvel cinematic universe. And there's then a lot of people are saying like DC is not cinematic. And I think that plays into the idea that they're all superheroes that are kind of impervious to any kind of damage. And yet Marvel and the X-Men are, they're mutants, right? They're by definition damaged humans that have extraordinary capabilities because of it, but they're also shunned because of it. So there's this complexity to a lot of the Marvel characters that's lacking in the DC characters. And what you were saying about like not liking superhero movies, I think that plays out in a similar way, where even if they're characters that can be empathized with, you know that Iron Man's going to make it out of there.
Right.
You know that they're going to prevail. And it's that lack of any kind of worry or concern about their overall being from the start to finish that allows you to say like, well, we don't care necessarily what's going to happen between A and B, because at the end we know they're all going to make it out okay.
Yeah, and then you bring in something like, you know, the Punisher or something, you know, and all of a sudden his turmoil, his personal dilemma, whatever it might be, of his family and how he goes about vindicating them. I mean, yeah, he's vulnerable. But not to get too far off track.
Sorry, yes, that was a little off.
No. That's, you know, I love that kind of insight. The one thing I want to do, I think that's a perfect play into Ready Player One. But before we do, let's hear your three-word review.
All right. So my three-word review for this, and it's more for the trailer, but I just love the...
Which is what it's supposed to be for.
The three-word review for this is Bunny Goes Boom.
Yeah, classic. And I think everything you were talking about as far as just the real feel, is this animation or is this real? I mean, I think that plays right into a good transition to Ready Player One, you know, which comes out March 30th, coming up pretty quick.
Yeah.
You know, the one thing about this type of movie, well, maybe not this type of movie, but what this movie implies is two things. One, the future in movies like this is always bleak.
The dystopic future.
Yeah, dystopic future. You have a place that no one wants to live in, so they need to find a way out. And of course, in this case, it's virtual reality or VR. VR is very real right now. And the thing about it is, it can get to the point where, and I have a lot of concerns about this just as a philosophical point, in the real space, not the movie space, but the real space.
Yeah.
In that, you know, what's going to happen when we have a society or, you know, your youth or whatever, where they don't like, you know, mom and dad telling them dinner's ready, or, you know, mom and dad saying, let's do homework, or just the reality of life that just at times does suck. And it's like, screw it, I'm gonna put on this headset, I'm gonna check out. And they get so enmeshed in this VR world that Ohio, in this trailer, how it looks, is what the rest of their life looks like, because they just escape into the VR world and just eschew everything else that is what reality is. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, you think you worry about VR, but I mean, even without VR, we're there already. I mean,
oh, in so many ways.
Children walking around with, you know, you're in the Twitter sphere, you're in the Twitterverse, you're in you're in your Facebook, you're in, you know, your Snapchats, and you're just biochemically addicted to social media. I was struggling with giving something up for Lent this year because we give up a lot of stuff over the many years. And luckily I listened to some podcasts and somebody was talking about the addiction of social media, and it's impossible to break, and you can't like give up your phone for 40 days because that's ridiculous. But the thing that we gave up was color. So I took everybody's phone. I took my wife's phone, my phone, and my daughter's little iPod Touch, and I changed it so it was grayscale.
Oh, okay.
So I took the color out of it.
Nice.
And there is a lizard brain thing about seeing colors in nature that evokes emotional reactions to it. And just changing it to a grayscale image on your phone makes the phone less urgent. And of course, you can toggle it on and off. So when you're watching a video, you can turn it on. When you're taking pictures, you can turn it on. Like when I have my Google Maps, I have to see where the path is because it's not made for black and white. So you can turn it on and off pretty easily, but then we try to make sure to police ourselves to turn it back off. And Audrey caught me today. She's like, why are you doing everything in color today?
That's funny.
And I was like, oh, I forgot. So that's our big thing. But yeah, I think it exists. I think VR is the next step. I think the nice thing about VR to me is that when we put on the headsets and we try to do it in all of the tests that we're doing, it feels like it's something that's very short term. But once you break that, and once you have a generation that doesn't get nauseated after 5 minutes in it, then we're gonna have problems. And I think you're right, you know, it is a different level of interaction and a different level of giving yourself up into something. The one interesting thing in this trailer that made me think of Star Wars Secrets of the Empire. So there's a little scene in Ready Player One where he is wearing a pressure suit. What the other person in the Oasis is, when she's touching him,
yeah.
He feels it in his pressure suit. Well, when they talk like that, they have pressure suits now, today, in this VR experience down in Anaheim and in London. That you walk through a play space, like a holodeck, with a VR headset on, a pressure suit on your body, and you walk through as a stormtrooper trying to protect a relic. And the story was developed by David Goyer. He wrote a lot of the Batman movies, and he wrote this experience for the Star Wars universe. It's kind of amazing that they're putting VR experiences out in the world, but they're keeping it out in public. So, you know, it's a shorter term thing. Once it goes into that private space, then all bets are off on people slipping into it as a lifestyle.
And the funny thing is, I think it's about a minute 21 into the trailer, you see all these people on the street with the headsets on. And yeah, it totally gives you that idea or that sense that it's replacing the phone. The other thing is, what do you do when everybody's in the VR world and that's how you're communicating? And it's kind of like everything you're doing in the VR world leaves the real world behind. So the real world winds up just getting to that point where it's falling apart. It's not maintained. What happens when a power outage happens? I mean, and I'm not making a joke when I say this, but I would be afraid that you would have like mass suicides. Like all of a sudden,
you can't get to the Oasis.
You can't get to the Oasis or whatever. And I mean, you're hours outside of that. And what you're stuck with is this, again, the dystopic future of your horrible existence for no other reason than you've done nothing to make your existence good. You know, you don't work at making your life better because you've been in the VR world for so long. And that when the power goes down, and maybe, what if it goes down for a long time? I mean, and all of a sudden you're stuck with what you have in front of you, which is this terrible, rundown environment you're living in.
No, I think it's, you know, in the end of this, he talks to his crew, he talks to his friends about saving the Oasis. But when he talks about saving the Oasis, my thought is, why? Let's strive for something more real. This has become something that is...
But that is what's real to them.
Completely real to them.
Exactly. Yeah. I'll tell you, though, the one thing I love about the trailer, and I think the movie's right there with it, is I think it's going to have an awesome soundtrack. And the cool thing is, it's Van Halen and Depeche Mode and everything. I mean, it's still relevant, you know, like, well, 2045, though, that's only like 25 years, 26 years in the future. It's not that much further in the future.
I mean, it's not that much further in the future, but it's written about a time in the past that is the contemporary time for when Ernest Cline was writing this, you know?
Yeah.
So he wrote it as a Gen Xer with his pop culture references. And this thing is just chock full of pop culture. I mean, the licensing alone on this thing must be through the roof.
Yeah.
To have Iron Giant, Back to the Future, Chucky, King Kong, Voltron, like you said, those songs, unless you can figure out a deal, Van Halen's going to cost you, you know, anywhere from $150,000 to $250,000 to put that song in there song. So you're talking about licensing all that. You're licensing Rush. You're licensing, you know, all these songs.
Right.
You're gonna spend a lot of money on that. And thank God it's in Spielberg's hands, because if you're gonna trust somebody with it, I think that's a great person.
Yeah.
To trust with it.
And the funny thing is, like, if you look at VR headsets, what they are today are definitely in their infancy. But if you look at, say, 30 years down the road, I mean, the internet today, and when you look at all the stats from the internet, whenever, you know, they had that missile scare or that North Korean ICBM scare in Hawaii.
Yeah.
Or you have, you know, crazy, you know, Thanksgiving and Christmas and all this stuff. But the funny thing is, everything is related to porn, right? So when you look at that, it's like, oh, the missile scare, all the porn, like everybody stops looking at, like, I don't even know what the site is, like, what is it, Pornhub or something? Everybody's looking at this, you know? And then all of a sudden the ICBM scare.
I don't know what you're talking about.
No, but all the, you know, but this missile scare comes into Hawaii, and all of a sudden the stats just plummet, you know, is what the news reports. And you're like, really? The news is reporting on how, like, people stop looking at porn, you know? But all I could think is, if you're looking at VR, they're not going to be worried about, like, driving race cars or any of this stuff. Everybody's going to be into porn, and unfortunately. And that's going to be the new reality. And then people will, like, stop procreating because of that, you know?
Yeah, I think that was my thing. Like, it has so much of the pop culture from our childhood.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That I was just getting very nostalgic over it. And then I thought, great movie. And hopefully there's not a lot of sexual innuendo, like the pressure suits, you know, like, hopefully there's enough limited sexual innuendo that it can still be accessible for my kids. This is definitely not one that I would take them to without screening it first, you know, and give it to them at home.
Yeah, I was about to say, I would certainly watch this one first, because I think what you're expecting and what's actually going to be on the screen might very well be two different things.
Yeah, I mean, this comes much closer to The Matrix than like a traditional superhero actioner, you know, action.
I think the trailer does an awesome job of blurring the lines between what's reality and what's in the game. Mm-hmm. With, you know, you have the guy who's kind of running the system, and then the game players who are trying to, like, kind of find the Easter egg and break down the system, and the guy who's trying to stop them. And as you're watching it in the trailer, it's like, where is the line between here's the game and here's the reality and
the life?
And yeah, I mean, I think they do a great job in that editing. obviously it's lots of CG, but overall, I mean, I think it looks really cool. I think a different take on explosion movies, as I've talked in the past.
I think this has a deeper message, and
totally.
I think you can get a lot more out of it. This is a boy, an orphaned boy, who, you know, has slipped into doing what everybody else is doing, you know, the opium for the masses for this generation, you know, and I think it's an interesting take on it.
I'd be curious if they get onto how VR changes the brain, the unintended consequences. I mean, if you think about humans, like, we've never really evolved to see things the way that you might be seeing them, where, whatever, a motorcyclist is jumping hugely or buildings are shifting space. What is that going to do to the way the brain evolves and our frontal lobe and, you know, like ADHD and all these kinds of things? Because once you take it off, can you or will you be able to function in the society at hand? And what will the society be if everybody's wearing these headsets?
Like I said before, I don't think we're far off of it because of where we are with how deep people are into social media. So I think the addiction to social media and the addiction to those spaces are already there. Yeah. And the jump to VR is just it's more of an exclusion than a jump to something. You know, it's more about blocking out the real world in a more effective way. You see people out in public, and when their phone is up and they're engaged with their phone, little else can distract them from what's going on that screen. Putting little blinders on it and making the audio and making it more immersive, it's a small leap for me.
It's so funny you say that too, because just the past few weeks, there's a number of cities, and I think a couple are in California here and stuff, and they're banning people from, I think it's looking at their phone while crossing the street. Yeah.
Yeah.
Having two earbuds in for listening to podcasts and music. So it does terrible for what we're trying to accomplish. But no, you're right. I mean, like, you're already looking at laws saying, you know, hey, you're going to cross the street. You can't have your phone out. You can't listen to anything. You have to be aware, because people are getting run over, like walking and texting and all this stuff.
Or they're falling into fountains and stuff.
Oh, crazy stuff, you know. And
I will say that if we're talking about only being in one ear, then you're listening to, you know, TJP, that just make sure that the ear that you're listening to is the TED ear. So if I'm on your left, then keep that left in. And, you know, Jimmy can be down there and we can kind of hear him muffled in the background.
I don't think they're going to have to worry, because we do it in stereo and not mono. So, yeah, we're good that way. So they'll hear both of us. Yeah.
Oh, good.
our nonsense banter. But no, I, you know, the thing is, like, the trailer, the thing I like about this trailer and, you know, the movie in general, but the thing I like about it is the future implications of what we're already dealing with, because we've only scratched the surface. It's only going to get worse. And this thing is already looking at it. And I mean, are people going to listen and pay attention? And I mean, my feeling is no, they're not. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, did you, when the inventor of the Oasis comes on and he talks about the Easter egg that he planted, that he hid, did it make you think of Bitcoin? Because when you were explaining Bitcoin to me the other weekend, I was like, oh, this kind of sounds like when you're mining for Bitcoin, all of these people are expending this energy to find this Easter egg. And there's, you know, like a finite, there's one Easter egg. It's just like the biggest Bitcoin in the world.
Oh, I got you. Yeah. No, I didn't think of that, but that makes sense. You know, mining for Bitcoin in the future. I'd have to see more to have that opinion or to form that opinion, but, you know, I can totally see what you're getting at, you know. And
oh, I checked on my $10 investment today, and I'm sitting again at $12.59, so I might cash out.
Hey, man, you're up 20%, you know? I mean, why not? No, but the thing is, you know, it's like, I listen to different podcasts about all kinds of things, some science podcasts, political podcasts and things. The biggest takeaway that I get whenever these types of topics come up is how incredible and amazing VR is, mm-hmm. and how everyone has the same kind of reaction is, though it's so incredible and amazing, the future can be scary because of how people will lose themselves in it.
Yeah. Have you done it?
No, well, early 90s, like Lawnmower Man version.
Oh, okay. We get a lot of vendors that come in and they say, oh, we have this capability of, you know, real-time stitching, and here's some of our stuff, and put on this headset, and we've developed this piece. So I've seen a lot of it, and really like the big thing to me is like the audio. When the audio is well designed, the audio is motivating where you look in the VR headset, it's really amazing, especially when you have like a horror or any kind of thriller aspect.
Yeah.
If you're just like walking along and you hear something behind you to the left and you turn and look at it, when you turn and look at it and you see something there that you didn't expect to be there, or, you know, something's on the, shifting to the other side, and it does it all in the audio space before you have your head follow wherever the action should be or where you anticipate the action to be.
Yeah.
That's really the interaction that drives something like this. So you add a pressure suit on top of that, which I have not experienced, you know, all bets are off on how immersive it can become.
Like I said, I mean, I've done the early VR, like I said, Lawnmower Man, when it really wasn't anything what it is today. But yeah, no, it just seems almost freaky, you know what I mean? But anyway, I think we beat it up enough. So what's your three-word review?
My three-word review for this is Gen X Overload.
Gen X Overload. I think that's quite fitting because of all that we talked about. I mean, there is just so many...
They're pop culture IP.
Pop culture, yeah. It's pop culture icons and the music and all the stuff. Yeah, the Back to the Future car, you know, the DeLorean.
The DeLorean's there.
Yeah, yeah, all that stuff, man. It's totally cool. Definitely want to see it. I don't know if I'll make it to the theater for this one, but no, this seems like pretty awesome visual effects. Lots of CG going on for sure. I'm assuming the majority of it's going to be voiceover with CG, but it looks pretty cool. So I don't know. What do you think?
I'm going to see it. Like I said, I'm going to see it before the kids see it. I don't know, within that first month, if I can cajole the wife into going.
Cajole. Yeah, very nice. Very nice. So, all right, Ted. Well, you know, I'll tell you what, man. We've done some long episodes with all those Oscar ones. So what do you say we call it for tonight?
Awesome. Have a great night.
Yeah, you too. And as always, everybody follow us wherever you follow us, on our website, iTunes, Stitcher, and Player FM, and TuneIn, and all of them. Everything should be working at this point. I know I said that last week, but I did some checks and one of them wasn't working. I don't know, but whatever.
Yay. Good night, everybody.
All right, Ted. We'll talk to you, man.
Bye.
All right. Later.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the holy trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.